welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen. With me today, the millionaire coach of millionaire coaches, Daniel Mangana. This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today.
And unfortunately, I did change it. Do you like it?
I wasn't expecting that one. I was doing the speaker one. Like, oh, this is a new accolade.
Ooh. There you go. Yeah, that had a nice feel to it, so that's why I wrote it that way.
Yeah, but it's groovy. Thank
unfortunately,
you.
We're Alex-less today. Alex is off. Yes. She's actually had a little bit of a vacay, which is good. She needed to get away.
Okay.
So. Yeah, she and Kenny, they just went a little bit down the coast or up the coast, depending on your viewpoint, and they are just getting away for a bit, you know? So
I look forward to getting some pictures.
Yeah. So, Alex, if you're tuned in, get those pics going. You know, get the selfie motor going. All right. Yeah. So anyway, I thought today we could all take a little time to learn from certain members of society that don't get their due, I think, but they have so much to teach us. And of course, when I'm talking, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Listeners don't know just yet. They're about to find out. What I'm talking about is the littlest members of society, the ones who most recently were in non-physical and very recently emerged into physical. And they are the ones who just bring, well, first of all, they are connected to all of us, like we are connected to everybody, but they also have that freshness of memory of what it's like in the non-physical that kind of lingers for quite some time, depending on, you know, how much of it is beaten out of them by their parents. But, you know, in your case, I think your little one probably is restoring a whole bunch of it. And, as a result, there's just so much to learn from them. Plus, they have collected all of what we have learned in our generations, and they are basically taking that and upping the ante with their generation. So they actually know more than we do at age one, which is kind of scary when you think about it. But you have been enjoying all of the wonders of being a father with a new little one, and I'm curious to know, what has your little one been teaching you?
Do you know what is so funny and yet not funny when you get that this is how it works? I was a guest on a podcast 2 hours ago, all about legacy, and we were speaking all about...
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, so when you were like, this is what you want to speak about, I was like, of course, that's what you
want. Hell, law of attraction, right?
Exactly what I was talking about 2 weeks ago. But and I'll touch on something that I spoke about a few hours ago. And it's something that actually came from, I was interviewed for an article in the Today Show blog back end of last year. And
beautiful.
And the topic was manifesting a good child. And the thing that I carried through in that was that you can't really do something outside of yourself. Well, you don't really do something outside of yourself, because at the end of the day, children are just soaking up the environment, and that's going to lead to whoever they are. There was some other stuff about judgment and all the other stuff, but the key idea was that ultimately, who and what we are is going to do more than any manifesting technique, any rampages you do with the kid in the morning, because they're just a little sponge soaking up everything. And what's so funny is this morning, we had the opportunity to have like a midweek cup of tea, coffee in the morning at a little cafe near my office with me, Olga, and Ethan. Ariane had already gone to school. And Ethan was just chilling in his stroller, and I took him out and I was sitting with him. And he's so observant. I just see him like scanning one section of the room, and he's like scanning. And then you can literally see his head move to another part of the room, and his little eyes are going like that. Then he moves to another side of the room, and you see like his facial expressions and his little...
Right.
And it was crazy, because a point that's been coming more and more, becoming more and more evident to me, when I just had this epiphany that I don't remember what it's like to be a baby. And I asked Olga, I said, babe, do you remember what it's like to be a baby? And then I looked at Ariana. Ariana's 5. I don't remember what it's like to be 5. And Ariana can't remember what it was like being a baby. But in this period of time, the scene is being set for who they're going to be as an adult.
Yeah.
But we don't remember our relationship consciously to that time, because we're still pretty plugged in.
Which is odd, but it's true.
We're still climatized into this whole material realm.
Right.
And it's still deeply, deeply plugged in. It's like, obviously I can see energy. When Ethan was just born, I could just see this globulous energy field that was just still sort of accustoming to, and I could see it. And when he was like, and it was just, it was bonkers. But the most powerful lesson, and maybe one that I'd love your input on, was that I don't remember that time. Other people don't remember that time. And that's allowed me to have a lot more compassion for people too, because the period in their life when they're becoming the person that perhaps is bringing transgressor energy into my life, or being a toe rag or a butthole, they probably don't have any conscious relationship to the period of life when all of the neural pathways that allowed that to be who they are were being built.
Mm.
So I can't get rid of them.
Yeah. That's a nice way to look at it too. I like that. I actually can remember bits and pieces, like little snippets, you know, like a scene that lasts 2 seconds, that kind of a thing. Mm. From when I was about a year old, just little things. I don't have any good way of describing what it felt like, other than to say it's like Ethan. It's it's exploratory. Mm-hmm. You know, you're curious about everything. You are exactly what you said. He's a sponge. That's exactly what you are at that age. You're just soaking up everything you can soak up. And there's so much new data to not only soak up, but also to process and make sense out of, and try to find some way to structure it in a way that makes sense in your mind. Your newly formed mind, I might add.
Yeah, exactly. Newly formed.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's crazy, like watching him develop a sense of familiarity. One of the coolest things is when in the morning I get my morning smile. You know, for a second he goes, oh, and then he's got this cute little smile, and he goes,
right.
And he sticks his tongue out and he moves his arms and his legs. It's like he's recognizing.
And he's, like, excited. He's got
this way, and he's excited. He's got this way that he looks at his sister. He just like looks at her and adores her and watches her running around. And then there's another look that he's got for his mum that is just this look of love. And it's just watching all of these subtle nuances developing to how he's connecting and relating.
Right.
He's now got into nursery rhymes, and he's loving nursery rhymes, and you can
see
his response when nursery rhymes are going on. And when I do attunements with him, I say, you know, and I'm just repeating these affirmations, and I can see his eyes going.
Wow.
It's crazy. Really, really crazy.
What do you think is the best thing that you're getting from him? I mean, clearly you're experiencing what life is like through his eyes right now. And, and you're just kind of in that place. You've kind of projected yourself there. But what are you getting out of it? What's the big takeaway you're getting?
Just to be so much more mindful of how I'm showing up. Because at the moment, he's feeding the energetics before anything else.
Yeah.
So, you know, really making a conscious, deliberate thing to always be in my heart more, which is translating into how I'm with his sister, with my stepdaughter. Because she's also still, she's coming out of that now at 5 going on 6, but she's still taking in the energetics. She's still soaking up and learning. She's got more auditory function. She's got a bit more of that, but she's still malleable, right? And
right.
So it's just holding me to a much higher standard all the time. Because he's got no sense of the separation of physical space. So just because I'm in the office and not at home doesn't mean that he's not connected in.
Yeah. Right.
So that bond still exists. So I'm keeping this consistent level of how I'm showing up, what's my thought quality, because he's actually learning from us in the house. Our thoughts, our emotional field is imprinting and creating the framework for him to grow into. It's a fabulously beautiful responsibility that's really causing me to have great level ups in my own personal work, taking my spiritual practice a lot more seriously. Not that I didn't take it seriously before, but to a new level, because there's a responsibility now for the legacy of an actual human being who's learning what it means to be a human being from us at home with him.
Yeah, and you're learning from him in the way you just described, because he's kind of, he's towing you to the line, saying, okay, you got a standard to meet here. Let's see you do it, right? Okay. I mean, you're the manifesting expert here. Well, that requires mindfulness. Let's see how good you are.
Let's see if you're going to do that. I really believe, and it's, you know, I've had some things around, just watching his experience mirror as well, because my mom unfortunately lost her dad when I was about his age, and then Olga lost her dad at the same time.
Oh,
so
my.
There's like these little mirrors in experience as well that are showing up.
Right.
Like, oh, wow. Like energetically, my life experience is already imprinting onto him because he's following. It's bonkers when you go down the rabbit hole with it and see, hang on a minute, everything that we're calling in and manifesting, we're calling in agents who are playing out our script. And this is a new little actor that's come in.
Yeah.
And we don't know what he's going to, I don't know this level of consciousness, what his role is going to be. But I do have a responsibility to show up and give him the space to play his role in his own way.
You know, one of the little jokes I like to tell, I think a lot of people have told this particular joke, is I wish that when I'd been born, I'd been given a manual and that I would understand life because I'd read that manual. I honestly get the impression that on some level, the kids who are being born today were given the manual. Do you get that sense that like they understand it in a way that we never did at that age?
It's, I mean, even when I look at Ariana is one of the most fascinating creatures I've ever encountered in my entire life. I've got a lot of kids in my family. I've got a lot of siblings and a lot of nephews and nieces. And I just learned so much from just observing like how she forms arguments. So she's got this real interesting thing that she does now where I can actually watch her strategizing in advance something that she wants to get. And she does this, like she'll do like, healthy food is good, isn't it? Yeah. And she front runs you. She future paces you with her wording. Yeah, it's good. And when you eat good food, you're good, right? Yeah. This is healthy. Look, I'm eating healthy food, aren't I? Yes. And I think if you eat healthy food, you should get a surprise.
Ah, yes.
And she does this whole thing and then she goes, can I have some chocolate, please? And she does this whole strategy. And she's got this thing that she does now. So we've been doing this thing where we watch Disney movies together. Ariana, we've got this little thing where we watch Disney movies. It's an excuse for me to watch princess cartoons, basically.
That's all right.
And she started to do this thing where she goes, Daniel, we didn't watch a movie together. Okay. But she does it like half an hour before bedtime.
Oh, well, of course. Now, that's been around for a long time.
Or the other thing that she'll do is she'll say, let's eat ice cream and watch a movie together. So she wants ice cream. So she's like, let's eat ice cream and watch a movie together.
nod, wink, wink. Yep, got it.
Of course we can eat ice cream, watch a movie together, aka you can have some ice cream, but I'll join you. And it's just watching that. And again, this is the foundation being set for her as a fully formed grown up human person.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is it happening live and direct.
Yeah. And we may not have a script. I have a feeling they have a script, but whatever, there's still a script going on one way or another. And that the way that script plays out these days is just, it's really fun to watch. I mean, we never had kids of our own. We helped open a school and we've interacted with kids on various levels, but we never had that direct experience. And yet, even just having the experience that I've had interacting with kids in the various ways I've been able to, I have for decades now been blown away by what I can learn from them. One of the best things that a kid ever taught me, and now this would have been about a 4 or 5 year old, and she was actually a daughter of an American woman and a Palestinian man. And the Palestinian had gone back to his homeland, so she was basically fatherless. And that, I don't remember what all the details were on that, but she was part of that school that I helped open that I was telling you about. And she missed having the male influence in her family. And she wanted it very much. And I'll never forget, there was a time right after we got our school open. Again, this is a very alternative school, so the kids basically run their day. You know, the staff members basically are there to answer questions if they have questions or help them out if they're trying to figure out how to do something. And that's about it. Well, my role that day was to be her father. There's no other way to describe it. She was calling me father. Mm-hmm. She went through a variety of different names, including what I found out later was the Palestinian word for father. Mm-hmm. And it was both serious and a game. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that I want to point out, because they treat everything like it's a game.
Because they remember that everything is a game.
Because everything is a game. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, what she was basically doing, I mean, in the immediate moment, she was trying to wrap me around her finger, and that was fine. I understood that. But in the longer term, what she was really doing is she was setting herself up for knowing how to get what she wanted later on in life, mm-hmm. in a non-threatening way, and actually mm-hmm. a way that would, you know, win friends and influence people, to use the Dale Carnegie line. Mm-hmm. And that would do it from a place where she was basically a child who was living in a very impoverished situation with a mother who was trying to struggle figuring out how to make ends meet, mm-hmm. and thriving. Mm-hmm. Thriving. She wasn't stressed. I mean, she was missing having a father around, clearly, but mm-hmm. she was thriving. She was growing. She was learning how to apply the law of attraction at a time that I didn't even know what the law of attraction was. I'm serious. That's what she was doing. And she was doing mm-hmm. it really, really well. She was getting exactly what she wanted at the time that she wanted it. And then there was another girl who was 11 years old at the time who saw what was going on. She had to get on the act. So the two of them were trying to push each other out of the way, calling me daddy. And that one was a little bit weird. But that's okay. The other one worked out really well too. She ended up becoming the school president. So she worked out well too. But nice. That was really intense to see. That's what the kind of thing you would see every day in the school, regardless of what the age of the kids were. The kids, like you were describing with Arianna, learning how to structure what it was they were trying to do, you know, basically creating their argument ahead of time, or creating their plan, and then mm-hmm. trying it out on people, getting the response, seeing how it would work out, trying something new if that one didn't work, you know, the constant mm-hmm. experimentation. And when you watch their minds work, it was, you could almost hear what was going on in their heads. Mm-hmm. That's what was, it was so cool. There was one incident where, actually it was the older girl, ended up, we were using a church for the facility at the time. So we were using their classrooms and so forth. And, she ended up, playing too hard in a nursery room and breaking one of the crib beds that they had in there.
Oh, wow.
So we had to deal with that, right? Well, mm-hmm. this is a school where the kids have complete control. So it was up to the kids to fix this one. They had to solve this problem. And if they didn't, we were going to get kicked out of the building, mm-hmm. which they didn't like too much. They were trying to find like 1,000 different ways to dump the responsibility off on me, and I wasn't having it. But watching their mind, we have, they have a structure called a judiciary meeting. That's where this kind of thing gets ironed out. Mm-hmm. And in the judiciary meeting, there were three kids who were involved in the situation primarily, and they were the ones who had to iron the whole thing out. And it was fascinating once again to watch their minds work as they tried to like gang up on me and find ways to get me to take responsibility for what they had done. And I mean, these guys were creative. Let me tell you, they had every single play in the playbook. The only thing that didn't work was that I was refusing to play, so it didn't play out.
Sorry, kids. This one's not
like you guys saw this one. This isn't me. This is you. Mm-hmm. This is the way the school works. This is why you wanted to go to the school. Remember? Oh mm-hmm. yeah, yeah, okay.
Amazing.
But you could practically see their thought process. You could see them trying to push the boundaries. You could see them trying to figure out how can we get around the situation. There's got to be a back door somewhere. We got to find the back door. And then when they found no back door, you saw them accepting. And in their acceptance, it was like you could feel the room change. The emotional tenor of the room just shifted when they went mm-hmm. into acceptance mode. And then instantly, from the moment they went into acceptance mode, within about 2 minutes, they had the entire problem resolved. They figured out how they're going to work it with the church, how they're going to pay off the broken bed, how they're going to prevent this thing from happening in the future. I mean, no input from me at all, other than me saying, look, I'm not here to solve the problem for you. That was it. That was mm-hmm. my entire input. But watching their minds put all that together was great. It was so mm-hmm. cool to watch. And God, it just made me wish that kids would have that opportunity more often, because they're so good at it. They're so incredibly good at it. Now, obviously, that's kind of a different situation from Arianna wanting to get the ice cream before she goes to bed. But there are parallels, you know, there are parallels.
Definitely.
Yeah. I just loved watching the way kids learn. That's one of the best things that I had with that school. And the whole, there's a whole model of school and a number of schools that have used that particular model. And one pattern that shows up over and over and over again is watching the kids experiment. They want to achieve X goal, whatever it is. You know, maybe they want to start a new club. Maybe they want to go on an outing. Maybe they want to, you know, they want to create a new career path. Maybe, I mean, all kinds of stuff. And then now they got to solve it. How are they going to get there? And they tend to use law of attraction without knowing how law of attraction works. They do it intuitively. Mm-hmm. And they also solve certain kinds of problems that we adults would have a very structured approach to. And they do it in a very non-structured way. Mm. If you know what I mean. Like they don't follow the rules. If you get my drift, they don't do it the way the adults would do it. They figure out their own way to do it. Let's see. Can I give you an example? The fact is any kid, if you just leave them to their own devices for the first 12 years of their life, somehow they'll learn how to read. It's just fact. That's just the way things work out. And this really? School has proven that over and over again. Oh yeah. Absolutely no doubt about it. You just let them alone. You don't know when. It may be at age 4, it may be age 12, but somewhere along the line, they'll learn how to read. The tricky part is figuring out how they did it. I mean, often you can tell. A lot of the time you can tell that most often they learn from each other. Mm-hmm. You know, one person learns how to read, and so her friend comes over and says, can you teach me how? And so she teaches her how to read. That's the most common. But there are some situations where the observing adult just looks at the situation, sees the kid not reading, and then all of a sudden one day he's reading. Like, how did that happen? Where did that come from? It's almost like at some point they absorb it by osmosis because they need to. Really interesting thing to watch. Mathematics, same thing. Mathematics, it's amazing how they learn math. They'll go along for years, not wanting to do anything with math. And then all of a sudden they, you know, a group of them form a club and they need to raise some money because they want to buy something for the club. And the school meeting, which is run by the students, says, well, we're not ready to fund that whole thing. You're going to have to come up with some of the money yourself. So now they put their minds together. Okay, we'll do a bake sale or we'll do something to raise some money. Well, now we got to figure out how accounting works. Oh, that means we have to learn how the math works. Well, we better learn some math. And then they approach a staff member asking or her to teach them how math works and then learn the first 6 years of math in 10 weeks. I mean, it's astonishing to watch. Absolutely astonishing.
Yeah, the human potential. I mean, I've studied the work of Project Renaissance and Learning Strategies Corporation. It's a company out of Minneapolis. And I did a lot of their accelerated learning techniques. And one of the things I learned from learning accelerated learning techniques is that generally accelerated learning techniques are about unlearning the way that we're taught to learn.
It's true.
And impact to the way we intuitively learn. So photo reading, I can consume books at 70,000 words a minute with about a 70% comprehension rate.
Wow, very good.
Yeah, it's great stuff. But it's all about, and if you do speed reading, my friend Josh, he does accelerate like advanced speed reading and stuff like that and memory techniques. He's got great memoryplaybook.com. He does like workshops and virtual stuff. But, you know, it's tacticity of like using your finger, for example, when you're speed reading.
Mm-hmm.
And things that we do as a kid, we want to touch them and feel things because that's how we actually develop.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than we're taught, well, we have to do it like this and you have to do the other thing and blah, blah, blah. But when you go back to like kids, like our natural inherent genius, when it's left unmessed up.
That's a good way to describe it. That's what it is.
When it's left unmessed up, it tends to do wondrous magic.
It does. Yeah. It's fascinating to watch.
It's amazing to watch.
Mm. Yeah. It's rewarding. I find also that it's encouraging. And by encouraging, I don't just mean that I feel encouraged for the world population, although I do. It's rather that I feel encouraged in my own development. I see them solve a problem that, from my perspective as the adult, should have been a really difficult problem to solve, and they solved it quickly. And so it's almost like I get the message, well, if they can do it, I should be able to do the same thing, too, if I run into a difficult problem like that.
Mm.
All I have to do is just change my perspective, change the way I'm thinking about it, not allowing myself to fall into the old patterns that I was taught and have been taught for decades now about mm-hmm. how to mess yourself up while trying to figure something out. But that's what they have to teach us. They have, like you say, they have the ability to teach us how to think outside the box, to use the popular phrase. That's exactly mm-hmm. what they're doing. There's no box for them. The box, I mean, it's almost silly to talk about outside the box. There isn't a box.
Yeah, there just is. And I mean, all of these constructs, and this is again goes back to like the stuff that I'm learning from Ethan and now applying to my relationship with Ariana. It's the box gets made based on the materials that they're given mm-hmm. in their environment.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're continuing to have them lean into possibility, if we're continuing to have them lean into things like the Tire principles, appreciation, understanding polarity, mm-hmm. Looking at contrast in a different way, we're giving them access to a whole new realm of scripts that doesn't yes. have limiting. And, you know, to your point about the way that kids naturally move into the law of attraction, well, think about it. The law of attraction is one of the universal laws. It's a law of nature, a natural law.
Right.
Humans take their analytical minds and go and pull themselves out of harmony with nature. But when we're left without that human messing up, we tend to move back to nature. Everything in nature follows universal law.
Yeah.
So when children aren't polluted by all of our human wondrous constructs, they remain true to nature, including mm-hmm. natural law, abundance, law of growth.
That's a great point.
Law of relativity, yeah. Not holding on to stuff because they don't have stories about it, just moving in flow. They have all of these beautiful gifts. So I feel like going back to the article and even what I'm doing, my role in contributing to both the kids, it's leading by example that the box doesn't exist. Because they only learn about the box because it's given to them by the environment.
True.
But we're in the environment, it's our responsibility. So this actually encourages me to keep ripping up the box whenever it tries to show up.
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to set the scene for the kids to be able to go and live lives where they're free of the box too.
How cool it is then. You get the double benefit. I mean, on the one hand, you get the great benefit of being the father and enjoying the fatherhood experience. Then you also get this part that's reinforcing yeah. what you've been dedicating your life to learn. I mean, that's great. Exactly. What a combination.
Exactly.
That is fabulous.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Really good stuff.
You also have an interesting situation in that you have a son of your own blood and you have a daughter who's a stepdaughter.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I kind of expect I know what the answer is going to be here, but I'm going to mm-hmm. kind of take the role of the social scientist and ask, is there anything different that goes on there? Because one's your blood and the other one's your stepdaughter.
There is a lot different because we've got cultural differences as well.
Mm-hmm.
We've got, because Ariana's got effectively two family systems going on. Her dad isn't into the kind of stuff that we're into. Her dad's family is not into the kind of stuff that we're into. We don't have the same structures that we have, things like bedtime and even like there's whole different systems that are different culturally, purely from her dad's family is more heavily Russianly influenced. Mm-hmm. Mum is kind of, you know, Dospedania, rural Russia, whatever. And so we've got that, but then we've also got the microculture of the family structures and how those run too. So, for example, the kids that I've observed that are on her dad's family, they're kind of more like left to get on with it and more mollycoddled a little bit, whereas I was raised more of like have independence and more structure and different dynamics with child to adult dynamics. So mm-hmm. she's got these two conflicting experiences. So I've got this whole thing of A, navigating my space in it, because it's not like I'm dealing with a child that doesn't have a father figure. She's got
right.
a father that loves her, very active in her life.
Good.
So I'm more of an auxiliary role as well. Mm-hmm. Then we've got the fact that she's very young. So the idea of stepdad isn't one that I want to create confusion in around her too. Mm-hmm. So I've been very careful in terms of the positioning and always making reference to, you know, your papa, have you called papa today? Da, 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 and creating that line. And people that come into that dynamic from the outside sometimes say, oh, Daniel's your dad and stuff like that. And I was, no, Ariana's got her dad. I'm Daniel. That's who mm-hmm. I am. Mm-hmm. And we've got a dynamic that we continue to dance with and play with. where it's still an intermediate auxiliary father figure, because I hold that space for her dad when he's not around.
Sure.
But still honoring, respecting that her dad is her dad. And he's not some guy that's not in the scene. It's someone that's always there and loves her and would do anything for her. So I've got that dynamic, but then I also have to honor the dynamic of, well, there are differences in terms of the responsibility that I have to Ethan versus Ariana, because Ethan doesn't have someone else over there. He's only got me, whereas Ariana's got the double dip. I don't have the same bicultural respect that I have with Ethan, because I can see his mom and say, well, this is how I feel about it. I don't have that same license and scope with Ariana, because her dad or her grandma, her paternal grandmother wants to say something or do something, then they have every right. Mm-hmm. So there's more of a negotiation. So there are different dynamics going on, and it creates this beautiful little ecosystem where there's so many opportunities for growth, opportunities to learn, opportunities for patience, opportunities for appreciation. But all of it's made easy by the fact that Ariana is obsessed with Ethan, like obsessed. And you can just see that the love just growing for Ethan, for his sister every day when, you know, he sees her and he's excited. So that environment of love, that bubble of love, makes it easier, but it's not without its challenges.
Mm. Yeah. And that does make sense. I mean, because she is a stepdaughter, there's, and especially since her father is still in her life, which is wonderful. I'm glad that's true. How can that not create wrinkles, shall we call it? You know, it's going to, it's bound to. To be honest, though, I kind of thought you were going to tell me that while you have to deal with the social constructs that you were just outlining, that this is the way I would look at it. They're just two human beings. I mean,
yes,
that's really what they are.
And for me, it goes deeper. They're just two expressions of my consciousness in my holographic universe.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So, I mean, down the rabbit hole, neither of them extend beyond that, but still the dynamic and dance that goes on between those strands of consciousness that I'm overlaying with does have difference in terms of what that relationship is.
Same but different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I definitely appreciate sameness. I totally get the different stuff in any kind of family dynamic or even just a friendly dynamic, whatever we're talking about between multiple individuals. But I especially like the sameness side of it. For me, that's been the part that I've always paid the most attention to. That's kind of like why it's probably the reason why I had so much trouble with social issues, because I said, what do you mean social issues? We're all human beings. What's your problem? I don't get it. But I do get it. I understand. But from my perspective, I just think about, I don't think about, you know, the kids in terms of who they related to, or, you know, what's their family, or, you know, what are their friendship circles, or, you know, what are their parents behaving like, or what? I don't think about them that way. I just think about them as, who are they? Who's this person that I'm dealing with right now? And I love who they are. I have yet to meet any of them who I don't love who they are.
That was how I came into it until I was in it.
What do you mean? What changed? What changed?
Just the physical experience of it and the emotions that come with that, and the ideas and agreements that come with it. It's like, oh, I didn't know that that was there. Oh, I didn't know I had that thought for. Oh, I didn't know I had that belief. Like when I came to the thick of it, then everything that I didn't even know that I had around it in terms of thoughts, beliefs and ideas came up for me to address.
Can you give an example?
Fears and anxieties, for example. Like, I was terrified that Ariana's, because remember, Ariana was at her dad's for the bulk of Olga's pregnancy. So she left and then came back, and there's another baby in the house.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So I had all of these fears, like, oh my God, you know, she's an older child that's been an only child and been the central focus of all love and adoration. Mm-hmm. And now there's a little cute baby.
Mm-hmm.
How is that going to work? And I was like, oh my God, my fears. And then it was like, Ariana just like, she was like, what are you scared about? Like,
yeah.
I love this baby. Like,
right.
And even little things like when her little friends come to play, guys, we have to go and give Ethan some love. And this is like what she says to her little friends when they come to play.
I love it.
I had like these completely irrational fears that there's going to be like this weird dynamic between the two. And it's like, No, dude, that's your human construct and your belief system. You need to go and see where that's showing up from you, because I'm going to show you that all I know how to do is love. And it's like, oh, wow. Okay, cool. That's
very cool.
Take care of that.
I have to admit that this probably enabled me to help open that school that I was talking about. From my perspective, I've always followed a rule of thumb that I first heard about in Monty Python.
What better way to lose rules of thumb?
Exactly. I don't remember what the name of the sketch is, but one of the sketches where there's this military figure who he likes to bounce in and out of the various sketches, and he loves to use the line "Wait for it," which of course has a long history in the field of vaudeville, but that one line, "Wait for it," has a very deep meaning for me. Because what I learned pretty early on was, if I just wait for it, something will shift in what I'm seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, feeling, experiencing. It's just a question of wait for it. It's going to come, whatever it is. And so that's always been my perspective in dealing with kids. If I see a kid behaving in some way that I personally would not, I wouldn't tolerate, or, you know, I draw a line on or whatever, but they're not doing it with me, they're doing it with some other adult, I follow the line, wait for it, to see what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. And that's, again, universal law, law of gestation. Because sometimes those seeds that we planted, you need to wait for it. Let it sprout. Let it come to life. Versus, pushing, and I've got to make this happen and make that happen. No, I can wait for it. I can do my part and then I can wait for it. Trust, that childlike.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
What's going
to happen. That's exactly what it is. Because when you treat it like it's childlike, it's an exciting thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something to dread. It's something to look forward to. Like, what's going to happen next? Like watching a good drama or something. Ooh, what's going to happen in the next scene?
I mean, I find impatience in my own life. Impatience for me comes from a place of fear. And I'm not
To
anyone else's life. I'm just saying for me personally. Because
I think we could paint that one across the board. I think that's pretty much true of everybody. Let's be perfectly honest. You know?
So when we know it's going to happen, this is what's happening. That's cool. I wonder how it's going to play out.
Yeah.
And then when we bring the appreciation in, as the stream would share with us, that's happened. Okay. Let's find the point of appreciation and then wait for it.
Right. Wait for it.
For physical reality to catch up from the vibrational switch that we've created for appreciation instead of being in fear.
By the way, Neo-Positivity, who's one of my Friday co-hosts now, really, I got to get you guys talking. I think you guys on the show again. I mean, because the time that he was on his first time, I felt like it was just me and him talking, and I wanted to get you guys talking. Because you guys
just like to see you have fun with new people.
I know you do. That's why you make these people laugh.
I could talk to them on WhatsApp.
But you two, I want to see you two in conversation, because you guys bring very similar perspectives in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
Different perspectives, too. I would just like to see. Anyway, he was posting here to see if we're going to talk at his monthly summit coming up on May 22nd. And I'm willing to consider that one, Neil. For sure, but I definitely want to. I want to get
his summits now. He's
cool. Have you? Yeah, I know you did the last one. I didn't know you did two of them, but yeah, that's cool. Mm-hmm. But somehow we gotta get you and him on a show, and I'm gonna sit back and I'm gonna listen like you were listening the time he was on. Because I mean, you guys have these two great perspectives that, for me, they just meld together. They're just perfect.
So you're just going to stoke the fire a little bit.
Just stoke the fire. Yeah, absolutely. Wait for it. That's it. Oh, God. If I thought that I could get him on right now, I would drag him onto the show, but I have a feeling he's got something he's got to go do. But,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. But hey, Neo, I mean, if you're interested, let me know. I'll send you the link. I mean, no problem.
If you have an NOA tennis match tomorrow.
Tomorrow afternoon. Okay. Well, hey, yeah, that's true. I mean, if you want to join us on
tomorrow, it's not going to work for me. I do have
not going to work.
Yeah, but we'll get it set up. We'll tell you up, and I'll pop it in the diary and make sure that we get it locked in.
Cool. Okay. That'd be good. But that's the same thing that I. Oh, and I see Kathy's saying hello. Hi there, Kathy. Saying fun to meet you, Daniel.
Hey, Kathy.
Yeah. Kathy is associated with WG, of course. So. She's the one who's involved in all the background stuff for the magazine and all that good stuff.
Nice, nice. I'm actually recording something with Debbie G tomorrow for her upcoming summit-y.
Oh, cool.
So I'm excited.
All right, yeah.
Debbie G time tomorrow.
Beautiful. All right. So anyway, but what I was going to say about this whole thing about how you and how I'd love to see you and Neil go at it, it's the same thing that I like to see with kids. I like to see kids, two or more kids, particularly two who are getting to know each other, who are, you know, they've known each other for, I don't know, a week or something like that. And you can tell there's an affinity there. And now they're like testing each other's boundaries and checking each other's interests out. And the conversations can last a minute before the next conversation takes place because they're constantly trying things out. That's probably one of the things that I most admire about little kids, their ability to jump quickly from one topic to the next as they're experimenting with their realities. They're learning how the realities work and they're learning how their interactions with others work. They're constantly trying out new things. So you see it when you see two of them getting to know each other. It's almost like a fencing match, but a fun one, a really, really nice and friendly fencing match just to see, okay, well, if I say this, how do you respond to it and all that kind of thing? I love that.
Ariane and her little friends, like, so our neighbors have got a daughter the same age, like days apart, same age. And they're both little blonde girls with, so they want to do, they call each other twins. And there was another little girl that came to stay, she was staying at the property for a little bit. One of Olga's friends had a friend come that had a daughter the same age. But that daughter, her mum's Russian, so she could speak Russian and she could speak Spanish. She didn't have English grasped. Anyway, so Ariana, when Olga was at her friends, Ariana and this girl would make friends, and I just saw this girl pick up English like that.
Yeah.
Being around Ariana.
Exactly.
Our neighbor's child came, and then there was this whole little thing of who's going to have Ariana. And then I just watched them go from these two little camps where one was getting left out sometimes, and she's my friend. And then you saw them all together, all playing and making up games. And it was just beautiful to watch this whole little ecosystem build and continue to this day. Now, when they're all together, you see them as making games and playing and teaching each other. They'll be teaching one English, that one will be teaching the other one Spanish.
Exactly. Yes.
It's a great little thing. And just watching all of their little personalities. Oh, that one's leading. Oh, that one's
right.
Oh, that one's this. And just watching them move in these little, it's amazing to watch. Amazing.
That's what it's like to run a new school along the lines of a Sudbury school. You see that all the time. What you saw was a microcosm of what happens with an entire school of kids. And it's like that little dance that you saw, you know, in a school environment is just being played out everywhere. And it's fluid. It isn't, there's no structure to it. The structure changes from second to second. And, you know, kids flow in and out of rooms. And one minute they're there and the next minute they're like, everybody's over in this room over here. And then two others are going over here. And then they're doing this. I mean, it's like energy flowing. It is fabulous to watch.
Again, it's the natural way for things to roll.
It is.
They haven't been jaded by the human thing. They're still plugged in.
They are indeed. I have another thought, and you just inspired it. I want to throw it to you and see what you think. Mm-hmm. For years, ever since that any time that I can think of, I've heard adults say that childhood is ending earlier and earlier. Mm-hmm. That kids are growing up too fast. They're being made to grow up too fast, yada, yada, yada. And I'll tell you honestly, my perspective is exactly the opposite. Mm-hmm. My perspective is that they're taking longer to grow up, so to speak. And what they're really doing is they're expanding their ability to take their own power earlier. And that's why it seems to the other perspectives that they're not being allowed to be kids long enough. But from my perspective, they're being kids up until adulthood.
Mm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, but I think really what really speaks to is like, I would say it's going to vary child to child. I think that if we look at the individual stories that each child's having, the individual experiences, it's going to be different child to child.
Sure. How can it not be?
Well, but ultimately, they're all playing out a perfect narrative.
Meaning what to you?
In terms of like, so I've been really playing with this whole thing that nothing's going wrong ever. And I heard it a long time ago. I was playing with it for a while, but it took me some time to really, really, really grasp it. Not because I didn't get the idea, but because I didn't like what that meant.
Okay. Well, I like that. That's a good start.
Because if nothing's going wrong, there's nothing to fix. Mm. And then my little Asperger's brain doesn't have puzzles that it needs to solve all the time.
Ah.
If nothing's going wrong, there's nothing to complain about. Mm-hmm. If nothing's going wrong, there's nothing to judge.
True.
And the more I've been diving into it, the more I've been seeing that, again, it's another opportunity for all these little micro things, ideas and beliefs that have been hiding in the shadows to be brought out to look at. But when we take this over to the experiences of childhood, I remember my friend Mira Kelly, she wrote the book Beyond Past Lives. I've quoted this a million times, but I want to bring it back again. She's speaking about, when she speaks about us judging people that aren't going down the spiritual path, she says, you know, take care not to judge people who don't pick up the spiritual path. They could have done that 1,000 times and they've come to see what the other thing looks like. Mm. To pull that back to crossing all of those together here in this, we don't know what this child is coming off the heels of in terms of past experiences or parallel experiences. This true. Could be the one of folly.
It's very true. Yeah. I
know. So yep. Then it becomes, for me, right now, and this is the game, creating space instead for people to do what their soul feels called to do versus yes. my beliefs and judgments about what they should be doing. And that hits home really hard with my work. What do you mean you don't want to follow through and come and create some abundance? Abundance is like the natural thing. Maybe they've been abundant for 1,000 lifetimes and now they want to try folly. We don't know. So like just owning that non-knowing and owing and letting go of the judgments, creating a lot of space. So overlapping that back to the kid situation, whatever they do, it's perfection.
I love that. That's absolutely true. I agree with you completely, 100%. Because you're right, whatever they do is perfection. Mm-hmm. And I had never really given it that kind of structured thought. To me, I just accepted them for what they were, and I was curious to know what that was. But mm-hmm. you just gave me a nice framework to really appreciate even more. Like, thank you very much. That's right. Good.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Because, I mean, well, first of all, why would you want to do anything else? Mm-hmm. Let's be perfectly honest. The only reason you'd ever want to do anything else is because you want to in some way control them.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it comes down to. And people mm-hmm. want to control other people because they're feeling fearful or they're feeling out of control themselves. Or, you know, they're hoping that if they control somebody else, then somehow their lives get better or, you know, something along mm-hmm. that line.
Things.
Oh, yeah. All the different excuses is what they really are. Mm-hmm. But when we learn to just kind of let go and just appreciate for where they are and what they are, mm-hmm. we do get that is an ultimate structure, really. It is the best mm-hmm. kind of structure. It's a structureless structure. It doesn't have any firm rules to it other than appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's as high vibe as you're going to get, really. Is there anything higher vibes than constant appreciation? I can't. Think of one.
I can't think of one. That's a yeah, groovy place to be.
It is. It's a very groovy place to be. Speaking of groovy places, I want to make sure I put in this note. I was trying to look up what our guest name. We have a guest coming tomorrow. We have a guest speaker, and I'm going to see if I can look him up without destroying the podcast. So if I freeze up or go away, you'll know something went wrong.
Okay.
So am I still here? Oh, good. I'm still here. That means this is working just fine. Good.
Everything still works. Everything still works.
Yeah. Well, there's a little bug in StreamYard that you can't open multiple tabs at the same time. But I open up a different window and it seems to be okay with it. But while this is opening up, I'm just creating a little space here. but we have a guest coming in who is an author of a book that a lot of people have heard of. His name is Andrew Kapp. And I don't know if you're aware of who Andrew Kapp is, but...
I don't know his name. What did he write?
I'm going to give you that title right now. He is... Let's see if I can get this to you quickly. I know the title and I can't remember it. Okay. I should have had this ready. See, this is what happens when you don't prepare. You look like an idiot on your own show. Where is the book? Come on. Please? Oh, yes. The last Law of Attraction book you'll ever read.
That's you ever need to read. Yes. 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 I have heard of that book. I've heard of that book
before. Yes. And he's going to be joining us.
A week ago.
Is that right? Mm. Okay. Well, Andrew's going to be joining us tomorrow and telling us about how he ended up writing the book and what kind of... I'm curious to know how it's been received. I know it's gotten a lot of reception. I know a lot of people appreciate it. I'm also curious to know what kind of pushback he got on it, because he probably got some pushback too. That's part of the contrast. But this is going to be a fun listen. And there's a little bit of, I don't know, arrogance in that title. The last Law of Attraction book you'll ever need. You will never have to read another book the rest of your life on the Law of Attraction. That's a pretty strong claim. So let's see if he can back it up. It's going to be fun. So I want to invite everybody to tune in for tomorrow's episode. If you can tune in into the live stream, that would be great. Bring questions. If you can't, just listen to the podcast recording afterward, which most people will do. But it's going to be good. It's going to be really good to have him on. And also want to take a moment to invite people who are not yet, well, most people now are subscribed, but who are not binge listening, who are not listening to multiple episodes. I want to invite you to do it more often. And I want to do it based on one idea. When you listen or when you watch, depending on which way you're doing it, how do you feel? If you're feeling better, get that feeling more often. That's why we call it your daily dose of happy. That's why we do an episode 5 days a week, plus the fact that I love doing this 5 days a week. But put that reason aside, this is a great opportunity to just keep raising that vibe, keep getting that vibe to a new level. So I want to encourage you, listen to more episodes and then share the episodes. Share it with friends, share it with people who you feel like could really benefit from it, because we want to keep spreading that message far and wide for those people who do want to have abundance in their lives. If they don't want abundance, that's fine, no problem. But for the ones who do want the abundance, they need the daily dose of happy. So please subscribe and share. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate you so much.
Yes, we do.
So, yeah. So this has been an interesting conversation about watching and learning from kids. I want to tell you two more stories that come to my mind about the Sudbury experience. That's one thing that happens when you start opening a school, because you have to justify, to the parents who are going to pay the tuition, why they should pay the, thousands of dollars to have their kids go to a school where they're not going to be required to do anything. it's a bit of a challenge to sell that one.
I think Olga will be all over that. She definitely
should be all over that one. Well, see, now that's the kind of person we were looking for whenever we were opening school, right? But because of that phenomenon, people do want to hear the stories. Plus, we like stories too. One of the best stories I like is the whole model came out of a school in Massachusetts, just outside of Boston, called the Sudbury Valley School. It's in Framingham, Massachusetts. And they put out a number of books over the years. One of the very first books they put out, the very first chapter, I'm not even sure if it was a chapter, I think it may have been an introduction or a preface or something like that, told the story of a young woman who was about to be graduate of the school. She had passed through all 12 years of her schooling in that school. And she wanted to pursue a particular career. They didn't say what the career was. And talking to some of the staff members, she had learned that there was one particular school. It's actually a school near where I live, called Wesleyan University. It was exactly the school that she needed to go to. It had precisely what she needed. So she and her mom did what kids who are ready to go to colleges regularly do. They went to visit the school. And sure enough, it was exactly what she was hoping for. It fit her needs to a T. So they went to the admissions office and found out that the admissions period was over.
Oh.
And that she'd have to wait a year.
Oh.
So they went home, and the next day the girl got on the phone and called the school and called the admissions department and said, "I want to come to your school." And the woman at the end of the line said, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm glad that you want to come, but I'm so sorry. The admissions period is over. You'll have to apply next year." So the next day, the girl got on the phone and she called the admissions department and said, "I want to come to your school." And the woman said, "Well, like I told you yesterday, the admissions period is over. You'll have to wait again until next year." So the next day, the girl gets on the phone and says, "I want to come to your school." This went on for about 3 or 4 weeks. Every single day, calling up. And at one point, the dean of admissions overheard and said, "Who is that?" And the woman said, "Oh, well, she calls every day. You know, she's been wanting to come to the school, but I keep telling her she's got to apply again next year." He says, "How long has she been calling?" "About a month." "Get her in here for an interview." But your schedule is packed. We have you booked solid for the next month doing interviews of kids who are coming in. Shoehorn her in. Give her 10 minutes somewhere. I'll come in 10 minutes early. Mm-hmm. Give this girl the interview." So they brought her in for the interview. Went in for her 10-minute interview. An hour and a half later, he comes out with her arm in arm, goes over to her mother and says, "I hope she decides to come to the school. She's exactly the kind of student we are looking for."
Mm-hmm.
And you read, you read that story for the first time, and it just catches you between the eyes that forget the fact that this school is one where the kids are left to their own devices. Look what the result was. This kid was resilient. This kid knew what she wanted. She believed what she wanted. In fact, belief probably wasn't a strong enough word for it. She was certain that that was the school that she needed to go to and that she was going to go to. It wasn't even open for debate. It was the school. And of course, therefore, the universe had to deliver that school experience to her, which it did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, first of all, what a great LOA lesson. And second of all, what a great way to introduce yourself to this new school model. The other school story I want to tell you about, we were talking a moment ago about how when kids come through the school, they can learn how to read, and often you don't know how they learn how to read. You know, they can learn skills you don't even know how they learned them. The best story along that line was the story of this one kid who had been in the school for 3 years. And each year, and this is a very common kind of thing. Each year the father had come in and was always very protected and like very worried and fearful, like, "Oh, well, he's not going to learn anything," all that kind of thing. And each year the lead staff member, guy who was one of the founders of the school, would reassure him, "Remember, this is what the model is all about. This is what you're buying into. You have to trust. You have to be willing to let him explore it and do his thing." So they would play this game every year. And then the kid would promptly come to the school and spend the entire year fishing in the little pond they had outside the school building every day. Winter, spring, summer, fall, every day. And I honestly don't think there were any fish in the pond. Mm-hmm. But he went fishing every single day. And then the next school year would come along and the father would come in and say, "You know, he spent his entire year last year fishing. He's not learning anything out of this." And every year, Daniel, the staff member, would say, "Well, you have to trust this model. This model works. You bought into it. If you're really going to be true to this, you have to trust it." 3 years into it, at one point, the kid broke his pattern. He went to one of the staff members and said, "I want to learn how to use a computer." Now, this would have been mid-1980s. So computers were just, PCs were just starting to kind of take hold of society's imagination. Mm-hmm. And the staff member said, okay. Now, bear in mind, this is before we had all these wonderful programs. There was no internet yet. None of that existed. If you wanted to learn how to use a computer, you had to program it pretty much. You know, it was that level of computing. And so the staff member says, "Well, you realize you're going to have to learn how to program a computer, which means you're going to have to know how to read." Mm-hmm. And the kid says, "Well, I know how to read." And a staff member says, "Well, where did you learn how to read?" "When I was fishing." "Okay. Well, you're also going to have to know how to do math because there's a lot of math in programming." "Oh, I know how to do math." "Well, when did you learn how to do math?" "When I was fishing." To this day, they have no idea how he learned any of this stuff. What they do know is he ended up becoming a vice president at Hewlett Packard.
That's insane. Actually insane.
So with that thought in mind, I think we'll draw it to a close, but thank you for this wonderful conversation about what we learned from kids. And we will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.